Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we get started, wanted to introduce you to the Union GK Premium. With Premium, you'll get vetted pro players and coaches, interactive breakdown sessions, and exclusive content from top names. Want to try it free for 30 days? Go to unionsports.com/content/join or download the app free at the Union GK on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Magid, live from San Francisco, California, on location in a high rise. I have been up here for the past week and not used to city life. You know, us in Los Angeles, we live in this rural community known as Los Angeles. And well, we don't have 70-story built. I'm like on the 70th.
You live in a high rise in Hollywood.
Well, I live on the third story in Hollywood. That's about as high as it gets in Hollywood.
Is that right?
The third story. somebody that knows a little bit about highfalutin life in New York City, the one and only 99 World Cup winner, Cisco Weber, joining us from
the high rise on like the 60th floor in New York.
Did you really?
99 John, I think, what, 40 something floor. Very famous building. God. It's co-op now, but yeah.
How crazy. So did you have the bell person and like the door person and all that stuff?
Several.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And they like tip their hat to you.
No. It was down by Wall Street.
Oh my gosh.
Our roof deck overlooked the whole East River. So that was cool.
That's pretty awesome. Well, somebody that knows a lot about highfalutin lifestyle as well, too, living in the Maryland, Baltimore area, UMBC assistant coach Nico. Oh, he's being called into the. Oh,
you're kidding. Yeah, we have a match today, so we got a lot going on around here.
Oh, my God.
Oh, great timing, Mike.
Great timing. All right. UMBC assistant coach Nico Roros, also part of Serie A Elite and Rome City Institute. Nico, what's up, man? I think, is this like your fourth return to the show? What is that?
I don't know. We stopped counting after two, I guess.
Oh, man. Well, we're excited to have you, man. So first off, you know, some people might not be familiar with what you've got going on right now. Why don't you tell them a little bit about what you're doing? You're at UMBC on the women's side now?
Yeah, so I'm an assistant coach and the goalkeeper coach for UMBC Women's Soccer. We took over the program back earlier this year. Head coach Rick Staton came on in January and then brought myself and the other assistant, Ashley Myers-Randall, on in mid-February. So I've been here grinding, working since, making some progress and, you know, trying to shake things up in America East.
I love it, man. You know, Saskia, a lot of the times, especially, and I think this is really important for young goalkeepers out there to listen to, that there's a lot of different conferences out there, even at the Division I level. And a lot of young goalkeepers, you know, they think of, you know, the Big 10 or the Big 50 or whatever it's called now and those types of conferences and don't realize that there's a lot of playing opportunities at very elite levels. And those goalkeepers at these Division I levels are very good.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many choices of where to play and not even Division I. You know, if you're looking at D3, if you're going to a JUCO, you know, there's great soccer out there, period. You know, find what fits for you school-wise and everything. But in the D1, there it's not just the Big 5.
No. And I think that's important a lot, you know, for Nico, for a lot of young goalkeepers to hear, you know. So tell us a little bit about the playing style in the America East.
Yeah, so I mean, we're just getting into conference play now. It's a very competitive league for where we're at. And, you know, for us in particular, stylistically, we're, you know, trying to adjust a few things, get a little more organized defensively, and we're just focusing on competing. In the America East, it's really anybody's game any year. It depends on the classes and that, you know, coaches bring in. It depends on the personnel they have that's healthy and able to play. And also, you know, the mood and the morale of the team in the moment. So for us here, it's more of just kind of being present every day, working hard and, you know, trying to develop, you know, our style of play, work on the combinations, work on the team chemistry, and get something creative going that kind of forges forward, creates a good foundation for future years.
I think one of the exciting things about a new staff coming in is you'll slowly get to build your philosophy, your team, and everything through recruiting classes, and change whatever needed to be changed and heighten the good things that were already there. But that's got to be exciting because you guys get to, you know, like I said, you go out and you recruit next year and your next classes mm-hmm. and everything will work into those slides. It's so different than pro. It's not, you know, like, all right, you're not cutting it, you're out of here.
No, it's
unless you're Deion Sanders, you can ask 50 to leave the football team, and they do. I don't know.
Bring in a new 60 people. Yeah.
That's crazy. And I, you know, there are programs out there that do that, but here, you know, we really like the foundation that was already here. We had some great kids, some great players, and just looking to kind of build off that, and you know, like we said, just keep forging forward.
You know, Nico, you know, one of the things that I think is really cool about the whole experience for you right now, obviously at the collegiate level, and we are going to get to the topic in regards to the qualities of the Serie A goalkeeper, because I think it's a fun topic, and I think a lot of people are really going to enjoy it. But I love talking about getting in the weeds about the college game. You know, you're from that area. You know, you know, you've grown up in that area. You know, you've coached in this area. So does that help you in regards to having a familiarity of the players, you know, around there, and obviously doing WPSL and that sort of thing?
So it does help. Not only myself, but even the other assistant, Ashley. She's from the area. She was a great player at Penn State, played a little pro in Australia and Iceland. So she also knows the landscape as well. We both have coached in the club scene. We both know people in the industry and like not just the Baltimore, Maryland area, but like the DMV area. So like, you know, surrounding PA, Delaware, Virginia, DC. So it definitely helps from like, you know, our recruiting perspective, but also, you know, we want to have connections with the community and like reach out. Like tonight, I know we have a youth team coming out to walk out with our team. So it's also like moments like that. It kind of helps create a different type of atmosphere as well for the community.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, you know, Saskia, we've talked about this before in regards to like, especially if you're a newer college program. By newer college program, I mean, you know, a newer staff, you know, coming in, you know, to really engage with that community is so important. You know, you want to establish that relationship right away. So, you know, so they're coming out to the games and they're supporting all the young women and everything. Whoop, did we lose Saskia?
It seems so.
I think we just lost Saskia. She just she clicked off. She's like, you know what? I don't want to answer that question. I don't want to be part of this community anymore. No, I'm sure we're having some technical difficulties. So, you know, while we're waiting for Saskia, why don't you add on to that, Nico?
Yeah. So, you know, that definitely in that aspect of coming on as a new staff, there's a few things that like, you know, we look at is kind of like, you know, what's here culture wise, what's here player wise, and also like what type of outreach we have in the community. So that definitely as a staff looking at all different angles of that, we've definitely, you know, come on board. We're all not even jogging. We're off running to the races and seeing what we can do to kind of make this our own. Because like, you know, we're one big team here. We're one family. So we want to make it inclusive for everyone involved.
You know, and speaking of that, you know, I think one of the things is that when young women come out and they kind of see this type of environment, they go, oh, you know what, like this is really cool. You know, because I think one of the biggest issues that I've seen a lot of the times is as we get Saskia back, Saskia, we thought you just didn't want to be part of the goalkeeping community anymore.
No, something weird. My computer, I don't know.
It's all good. I was just saying
tech savvy I am. So.
I know. Well, I was just saying with Nico, I think, you know, one of the really cool things is when you start establishing that relationship with the community. You know, yeah. One of the problems is that like a lot of players out there, they want to go and they want to play college soccer and they've never seen these schools. They've never seen how they play or anything like that. And then they don't even realize that there's playing opportunities in their own backyard that if they go out there and check it out, you know, that might be an environment that they'd be interested in.
No, absolutely. I mean, for me, when I was recruited, you know, when I, it wasn't like there weren't as many programs back then, but you know, UNC, like there, like all the big names. And back then it was more on the East Coast than across the entire country. But I think I stayed in my backyard and I went to Rutgers. And, yeah. And at that time, you know, they were always kind of at the bottom of the top 20 and so on. But that was, there it goes again. Why is my computer? But yes,
we have we have.
Yeah, I turned to my backyard for sure.
Everybody good? Everybody good? Everybody good? Can everybody hear everybody?
Yeah, I'm good. Don't worry about it. Don't pay attention to me.
We've had technical issues the last 2 weeks.
No, it's not.
The level of technology.
It's never mind. I have to go get an external drive. My disk is full. Like, I don't know. And I don't understand any of that. And I don't know.
So. Oh, geez, Louise. All right. So let's get a little bit of into what's going on right here, Nico. So tell us before we get into the topic here, what the heck is Serie A Elite, and how did you get involved in this?
So Serie A Elite is a showcase that primarily right now is focused on the boys' side, looking for players 13 to 18. And through this process and like the showcase itself is a 2-day event. Players sign up, they come out. It goes through like a physical session, a technical session, and a tactical session of just kind of playing and scrimmaging, and then trying to identify some players that could potentially play at a higher level in Italy. So through that process, you know, it goes through Rome City. So little backstory, when I was a student at Rome City, class of 21, one of our class projects that year for the kind of sports law class, we had three groups and we split the whole class up into three groups. And our project was to present to the Serie A president and his board on how to expand into the US. Fast forward, probably like a few months, say 6 to 8 months, they opened up an office in New York. So from there, you know, they started building this program. Which is fantastic. They've also had other, like, you know, watch party events and really trying to grow the Serie A game in the US. So from me as a student, fast forward to now, which has been 2.5 years, I've kind of seen things come to fruition. So it's been a really cool process to kind of see that. I've been a part of the showcases now for 2 years. They've had the showcases now for 2 years. So I've been a part of it from almost the beginning. And, you know, with the kind of data collection, with observing players and all that, and also tracking players over the 2 years, they're now going to be able to invite players to Italy this upcoming spring to, you know, have, you know, probably 10 days to 2 weeks there to actually, like, you know, play, to train, to be seen by scouts, to have some trials and things of that nature as well.
I mean, I think that's really cool. You know, Saskia, obviously, you know, when you were coming up on the men's side, Serie A was like that was like the pinnacle.
When I was coming up on the men's side?
No. When you were coming up in the game on the men's side,
Serie A was the pinnacle. Yes.
But
what I think about this is like I sit back and I think about the players that are slowly starting to migrate to, you know, the English league, you know, on the women's side, I'm thinking about the women's side, you know, to Spain, to France, and so on. And, you know, these are things that I feel that evolution wise should be implemented on the flip side, on the NWSL side, and even on the MLS side, you know, where we're kind of infiltrating other countries, having something so amazing like this, and then identifying players in Europe and bringing them over and letting scouts see them and putting them in this here to get the word out, you know, not just to rely on what we see on the internet or sending one scout out here and there or word of mouth.
You know, I love what you just said right there, Saskia, you know, and Nico, obviously, you know, you're involved in the women's game at the collegiate level. And it seems like a lot of international players are starting to come over. I know on the men's side, it's been prevalent for the last few years in regards to international players coming over on the men's side. But it seems on the women's side, you know, I was just looking at some of the rosters of the teams that you played in your conference, and there's quite a few international players, it seems.
Well, I'm going to interject really quick. Well, I think it's been like that because And I might be wrong, Nico, please. But on the women's side, this like the second best second division league in the world is, in my opinion, the NCAA system. You know, and so not only are you getting an education, let's put that first and foremost. You're at 4-year university, and we see a lot of those players come over and play for the big teams. You know, Florida State's always been huge at having, you know, major international players on their team and stuff, and then going back and playing pro.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, it's, you know, I agree with that to an extent, but it also really comes down to, I think, the culture and the kind of generation where people are really focused on, like, expanding their minds and, like, getting that education. But it also depends on the player and, like, where they come from and what they want to focus on and what they want to accomplish in their lives. Because if somebody wants to have, like, say, a successful business and they want to study business, that's fantastic. But for, like, other players who just want to play, I know some players that, you know, they say, I don't really want to go to school. I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to play. I'm going to see if I can better myself in the sports, see if I can get, you know, a new contract at a bigger club, see if I can help this club get promoted. So it really depends on the mindset of the individual.
No, agreed.
But, you know, I definitely agree that, you know, in the U.S., the quality is very high.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, talking about, you know, Nico, what's going on here with the Serie A Elite Showcase thing, I think one of the cool things about this, you know, just kind of to bring it back together before we start talking about the qualities that you're looking for, is it seems like there is an educational avenue with it too. So it's like, I think a lot of parents out there of young goalkeepers, you know, who they hear about trial opportunities to go overseas and everything, they get very worried because, you know, education is so valued here in the United States. And they're so worried where their kid's not going to, you know, they're going to go over there and they're just going to be wild on a soccer field and, you know, with no guidance whatsoever. But it seems like Rome City is very involved in the studies program too.
Yeah, they are. And like, you know, like I said, I did my master's there back in 2020 and 2021. And, you know, for me as a student there, it was really fantastic from the academic side, but also on the coaching side for me in particular. So my master's is in coaching and sports management in particular. A lot of my professors, they were, you know, Antonio Cincotta, who was my methodology professor. He was at the time at Fiorentina. He was a Serie A manager on the women's side. Marco Montini, he's with the Fiji Chief, the federation there. He just won the World Cup with the Italian, I believe it was under 23 team. On the men's side. So, you know, for me personally, it was top education for what I wanted to do. But with that, I also worked in the academy system there at Trastevere Calcio. And, you know, for me in particular, I got to work with the Fiji Chi. I got to experience that academy, you know, culture, that structure, and also learn the Italian school of soccer and also goalkeeping. So for me, it was really important on the educational side for what I wanted to do and what I wanted to get out of it.
You know what's so funny about this, Saskia, you know, is that Italian goalkeepers they're always sometimes considered some of the best in the world. And yet I know very little about their developmental system. I always hear about the English, you know, developmental system and the German developmental system, but very rarely do I hear anything about Italy. Is it the same on your side?
Yeah, it's the same on my side. Absolutely. Yeah. So do tell.
So Nico, so tell us, tell us, that's why you're here, man. What the heck are you looking for in the Serie A? What are the qualities that the goalkeeper needs?
So that's a very loaded question. So when we talk about Serie A, like you're asking, the way I'm getting it is, what do you need to be able to play like for a big top club right now? Okay. So I don't think that for what the Serie A Elite Showcases, you know, in particularly for, because you can't really have like a 13, 14, 15 year old go start at that level for the most part. You know, you might see a 16, 17 year old be able to get that start, but that's through the development. So I think, you know, the expectation is like here for like, you know, the first team to be a, you know, the number one. And there are quality attributes to the game that I see in five pillars. I see a technical side, mental and psychological side, a physical side, but also a social side. The four of the five are most common. I add the social because as a goalkeeper, you have to understand the game. You have to be able to communicate well with others on the field and off the field, and be able to have those lines of communication with your teammates, but also with the coach, because, you know, you're kind of a conductor on the field. Mm-hmm. You have to have that voice, and you have to create energy. You want to have the players work for you. And, you know, say you go down 1-0, you have to have that voice to get the ball out of the back of the net, which is very tough, but, and then get your team back on track and, you know, forge forward and continue. So I think that's where that big social aspect comes in. So for me, I like to use the five pillars. So with that, you know, in general, I think, you know, for players, that's what coaches look at, or attributes like that, because for this particular opportunity, it's seeing what attributes and what qualities of those five pillars that the player possesses. And because they're, you know, the showcase is based 13 to 18, it's more for the academy side to identify mm-hmm. players to go now be a part of that Italian school, to learn the Italian game, to learn the methodology and the structure of that particular club if they end up going there. So
Nico, I just want to add on to that. You know, Saskia, you know, we've talked about this in regards to going overseas, and Nico, you bringing up the social aspect, that's just so massive. And like, if you want to play, and you're more than likely, it's going to be easier for you to succeed in a different league in the Serie A, if you come from the United States, if you spend a little bit of time within the culture first, as opposed to just getting thrown in there. You know, we've seen a lot of times young players, you know, get sold, you know, transferred over to another country, and it doesn't work out because they're just not familiar with the culture. They're not familiar with the league. And because of that, there's just that uncomfortability, especially as a goalkeeper.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's why, you know, Nico brought up, but that's why you're not going to see a 15, 16 year old goalkeeper on the first team, like pretty much anywhere, because it does demand a certain amount. You have to be able to socialize with your team. And I don't mean like going to bars after a game and stuff like that, but I mean, you have to garner a certain amount of respect from people that are twice your age, that have been in the league for a long time. And you know, that's why goalkeeping tends to be at a higher age range to really break into any like top division one, not college, but any top division pro team on both sides, really. And there takes a lot of development. And I agree 100%. It's very hard at a young age to go get plopped down in Italy, learn the language, you know, try to, you know, get some sort of understand the culture, not be homesick. And I know there are kids out there listening going, oh, I wouldn't be homesick, I'd love to play. It's not easy. It's not, you know. And I just had that conversation we were talking about, like with, you know, one of our young players that went down to Mexico as a goalkeeper and was struggling the first 2 days just because of the culture differences and the language barriers and everything like that. And that's just for a week, you know?
And I think, you know, one of the good things, Nico, about this, you know, kind of getting back to your program that you're doing, is that the goalkeeper is not just being thrown to Italy. And it's like, best of luck in Milan. Enjoy yourself. Hopefully it works out. Yeah. No, they're going over there and they're spending a little bit of time getting acclimated to the culture and to the experience. And then after that, you know, they come back, and then, you know, if there's more interest, you know, they come back again. So it's a slow process, as opposed to just getting thrown immediately into it.
No, exactly. And you used a really good word there, is experience. And mm-hmm. not only in the soccer sense of having, you know, game experience, having training experiences, having, you know, this particular situation experience to learn from it, understand it, but also that life experience.
Absolutely.
Which kind of goes back to what Saskia was saying about, you know, older keepers probably get the nod before a younger keeper, is because of that experience. And that's one thing that I think a lot of young players, they kind of overlook, and they're like, oh, why am I not playing now? And it's because of that experience, and it's finding the opportunity to embrace the moments to gain that experience, but also be around the older players, the more experienced and seasoned players, and learning from them, learning from their experiences, having those conversations. And that line of understanding is now, again, part of that social aspect that really pushes the keeper to develop and become better. And that's off the ball as well.
Mm. And I think you see, if you wonder out there, like any young kids, like, well, you know, you see young field players and, you know, well, we all know that field players can get subbed like a lot even more easily. And it does come down to some simple facts like that than a goalkeeper, and where you're not going to sub a goalkeeper and you're going to kind of stick with a goalkeeper maybe throughout a couple seasons to get them their experience and all the pillars that we talked about, you can sub in a field player and say, okay, I'm going to throw a 15-year-old in for 15 minutes or something every game, and then eventually some more. And it's just a different, it's totally different.
Yeah. You know, Nico, I want to ask you this, you know, is obviously, you know, Serie A is known as a very technical league, very defensively sound, a lot of structure there. So with that being said, when you're looking to identify goalkeepers that you think are going to be successful in Serie A, are you looking for that at the younger ages? Are you looking for people that understand how for their team to keep shape and how to read the game, as opposed to necessarily if it's England, you're like, oh, well, you're looking for somebody that's big and strong and they can handle crosses because there's so much of that going on in the game there?
Well, I think that goes back to the basic principle of goalkeeping. Like, you know, when you think of like technical and tactical, like, you know, people think, oh, I can punt the ball like this, I can distribute like this. That really doesn't matter if you can't get the ball in your hands and if you don't have that technical ability to make that save. So, you know, for me, because I can speak on my experience that, you know, I've had with the Italian school, that technical aspect is very important, especially at the young age. The tactical aspect can be learned over time. And there's a sense of, okay, like, you know, through the academy system of, okay, let's have fun, enjoy the game, fall in love with the game. From there, okay, we find a little technical abilities, okay? We learn how to train, okay? Say like, you know, 10 to 13, then from 13 to 15, 16, somewhere in there, you're training to train. Then at the next point, okay, now you're training to compete at some point. And I think that's a good way to see the academy structure. So for me, I'm like, when I'm there and I'm creating a session, based on, you know, the attributes that I think could be well placed in, you know, that potential age group that, you know, for that player to be playing at, because age is not only a thing, but also the level, because players can play up as well. So for me, those attributes, you know, they stem from the technical aspect, which is huge in the Italian, you know, school of soccer, but also the school of goalkeeping. So my experience at the academy level in Italy, it was, you know, all technical with some tactical aspects. And then there's a point with some of the older players that now, okay, now we bring some defenders in, and then, okay, now we're in with the team and with the goalkeepers helping make adjustments at the time. Like, you know, we're on the field. Okay, if he has the ball there in this situation, do we, you know, step laterally? Can we show for, you know, to be a supporting player? Do we step back? What foot are we going with first? And getting into more, you know, the specifics of the technical stuff so they can make those technical choices on their own and learn from their experiences. And huge thing with that was once or twice a month, the Fiji Chief, the Federation, would come into the academy and, you know, we'd have conversations about this, and they'd be on the field with us once a month as well to kind of find that structure.
I think that, you know, I think that's important, you know, and obviously, you know, one of the difficulties in a country like the United States, Saskia, you know, as opposed to, you know, I'm not saying Italy's a small country, but it's a smaller country than the United States, is that it's very difficult to get kind of a U.S. Federation at every club practice, you know, involved in every environment from a coaching education standpoint. I mean, we don't even have a full-time goalkeeping program here in the United States. So that's a whole other topic right there. So like, I think that would be, you know, that would be challenging for a young goalkeeper to come over to Italy. And if they don't have a technical foundation here first.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, yes. And I think that it would be wonderful if we could all get on the same page, and have that sort of a structure, like a build up structure, which I totally agree with. I totally agree with, you know, what Nico's saying with, you know, going with technical first. And because at the same time, the field players at 12 and 13 years old you know, aren't maybe tactically responsible enough for to jump into things either. Like if you're trying to organize and your defense doesn't get it, you know, at that age either. But I think that, you know, you're right. Like if you don't have the ball, then, you know, if you're not getting the ball, making the saves, technically doing what you're supposed to do, then how do you build out of that? So, you know, it's one foot in front of the other, and it takes time. I still technically understanding the game. Like, you know, it just, and I felt that even for my career, there's a moment when things kind of flip and you do start reading the game and you do start seeing how do I organize things so I can manipulate situations, and that, you know, your brain has to develop and everything else has to develop as well to get to that point.
You know, I think you're just bringing up a really good point, Saskia, Nico. Obviously, when you're talking about bringing in a 13, 14, 15-year-old into a new country and a new culture and a new environment, you're still talking about somebody who's in the development, not just on the field, but off the field. Too. You know, so like it's important to well round the individual in order to have a successful goalkeeper, you know, over there, right?
No, definitely. And that goes back to what I was saying before about that life experience. Mm-hmm. And that creates a fine line of being comfortable, being very uncomfortable. And it's how you deal with that situation if you're going to, you know, continue to grow or if you kind of shut down. So that fight or flight response. And it's, you know, it shows kind of that mentality going to the other aspect of it, the mental aspect of the game. If the player is able to, you know, get through that hard times, because the game is, you know, the game is beautiful, but it's like life a lot as well, just from a philosophical standpoint of things, you know. Are you going to panic when the times get tough and there's a rough situation, or can you, you know, keep composed and find solutions? Mm-hmm. And that's huge. And I think, you know, life experience kind of helps develop the person's brain, any individual in general. You know, myself, I've gone through some hard times, but I have to figure it out. And if I don't figure it out, it's going to keep happening until I do figure it out. And the same thing goes on the field. Mm-hmm. You come, you get set, and you're too far close, you're too near to your near post, and the ball keeps getting slotted past you in the back post. That ball is going to keep happening because you keep giving the opportunity for it. So you have to learn from it. So, you know, that's a huge part of, you know, even just coming to a showcase or like, you know, going to a practice and having a tough situation if you're at like your club or academy team is, you know, understanding the moment, respecting it, not getting too flustered, but finding the solution, because that won't only help you develop as a player, but also as a person.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's really interesting about what you just said right there is how flustered I was getting with my light falling off and down on my laptop right there. And I just put it over to the left, right over there. And I was like, oh, I'm problem solving right now. I'm not freaking out. I'm not panicking in the moment. And this is all because of the experiences I've had throughout my development as a podcaster. I'm able to handle the situation.
You mean you didn't have a panic attack when I went off the screen?
I would have. I would have. You know, one of the things, you know, Nico, you know, in regards to this is that, you know, obviously there has not been a history of American goalkeepers over in Italy. You know, there's been a history of American goalkeepers in Germany, in England, in Belgium, in the Netherlands, all sorts of different places. But Italy has not been one of them. What are the attributes of an American goalkeeper that you think are going to be successful over in Italy?
I think the physical part. Because U.S. with you know, especially the way the school system is with gym classes and all that, you have different sports throughout middle school, high school, and, you know, sports clubs and all that playing in the neighborhood. It's that different type of coordination from, like, you know, hand-eye coordination playing basketball to different athletic movements that are not just, you know, sports specific or position specific to the game of soccer, but also in general. And those, you know, those athletic movements and attributes kind of build towards your athleticism. Between that and also a lot of, you know, young players now getting extra training with a performance coach or, like, you know, working out in the gym or things like that really helps develop the muscles, also helps develop you know, the athletic ability that can translate to the field as well.
You know, I'm throwing this up here right now, Nico, because, you know, these are some clips, and thank you for sharing, you know, some of your clips, your training and everything like that. But if you look at this, you know, the profile of the American goalkeeper really is becoming a, on the men's side, you know, 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", long, yeah, wiry, very similar to the build of the Italian goalkeeper that I'm seeing today. Is that one of the things, like, when you're talking about from the physical, is just the frame?
The frame of the person, but also, you know, the explosive movements, mm-hmm, through them, that kind of that twitch in the muscle. Because, you know, for a goalkeeper to dive, a lot of it comes through, like, for me, my understanding and my belief, it comes through that big toe. Okay. I got turf toe last year, completely knocked me off my game. Going through the exercises to come back, I noticed a different type of explosion, like when I was still playing. So definitely that, you know, played a big part. But like here, this is Robin. This is from the last school I was at. So Robbie, he's actually German. He's from Germany. He moved back there. He's playing back there now. But, you know, when we were recruiting him at the time, you know, the physicality was one of the things. And I think the physical distinction of a player, you know, whether it be in feet or meters or however you want to look at it, that definitely plays a huge part in where a player goes, especially a goalkeeper. Because from my personal experience, like, you know, I'm 5'11", so I'm short. So I got looked over a lot because of it. You know,
you're not short. You're above average height for a,
I was waiting for a
male. For a male, don't complain. 5'11", jeez, I'd love to be.
Yeah, but, you know, when you have an agent and, you know, you're talking with teams, they're like, oh, we're looking for 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", and I am about 4, 5, 6, 7 inches off of the type of player they want, the, you know, the qualities they're looking for in that physical standard. So, I mean, I think that plays a big part, you know, from training the height. You cannot train height. It's impossible. But you can definitely, you know, John Bush, heck of an example. John Bush, shorter goalkeeper, but one of the MLS best. And it's because of his physical ability. He didn't let it count him out, but he gave, you know, to his training, he gave to the life that he was, you know, living day in, day out, to put himself in the best possible position to, you know, make the saves. So it's training your situation as well.
No, of course. And, you know, I think, you know, Saskia, you know, one thing that I want to bring up, you know, with you is the fact that, like, you know, 13, 14, 15, you really don't, I mean, you can have an idea of what the size is going to be of a goalkeeper, but you really don't know how they're going to fill out. You don't know how tall they're going to be or any of that sort of thing. So it's still a little bit of a crapshoot, isn't it?
It is, but I think you can have an idea. Okay. I think you can. Look at their feet.
Are you saying my size 9 feet already gave an indication?
Exactly. Like, you're training a you know, a 14-year-old girl and she's got size 11 feet and size 10 hands. I think you can kind of assume she's going to be over 6 feet. But I don't think it necessarily translates as well into the women's game. I think we do see women's goalkeepers taller and everything, you know, you have your Lunder Murphys and stuff like that, but sometimes it's not better. And I think there's still that in between height, whether it's 5'9", 10, 11 in the women's game. I can't say 5'9 short because I'm 5'9", but I think that what we're finding with the taller goalkeepers is, I think, slower goalkeepers. And people can come at me for that. I'm not saying Murphy. That's not what I'm saying. I was using Casey as height indication. And that comes down to technical. It comes down to training your feet, understanding your body size, shape, and everything like that. Women move differently than men. And I think that I find some of the goalkeepers that I watch that break that 6-foot barrier are a little bit slow. And so, you know, some of the goalkeepers I really like are probably under 6 feet and very explosive, have really good quick feet and have their positioning down to make up for their loss of height. And so I don't like, but I get it. I get like, I've dealt with college coaches that are like, well, you know, how tall is she? And I'm like, that should not be your only concern, you know, like, well, I want somebody that's, you know, this tall or that tall. And I'm like, well, you just missed out on a great recruit. You know who you are.
And so, that goes back to the point, just like, you know, from technical to tactical to technical, you can have a tall keeper, but if the player cannot catch the ball or get in the right position, it's not going to help you much.
Yep.
But aren't you Nico at like 13, 14, 15, just getting back to the showcase environment, aren't you looking for ceiling? So they might necessarily not have that yet, you know, and obviously recruiting in the college game is a little bit different because you're looking for a little bit more of the finished product, you know, at that level, because you're talking about an 18, 19 year old.
Well, I don't think you look at the kind of the height attribute of a player until they're a senior player, because they're still growing and developing. And like, you know, we were talking about, you know, first team versus, you know, youth. You know, the first team, you look at, you know, their mentality, how they are, if they're, you know, down to earth or if they're arrogant. You look at the height, you look at, you know, how they are with their feet, how they can catch, their positioning, technical ability, and all that. At the youth level, you look more technical, a little bit tactical, how they are as a person, if they're a little more closed, if they're quieter, if they talk a lot, or if they're very open-minded, closed-minded, like, you know, receptive, if they would be receptive to taking in new information and learning and being in that growing mindset environment. So, I mean, that's another thing, like, you know, if a player from the U.S. were to go to another country in the academy, if they're closed-minded, they wouldn't fit the profile well, just because it wouldn't work out for either party. Both would be frustrated and no one would be learning, compared to the player that would go that's open-minded, you know, trying to understand, trying to learn the language, trying to get a better understanding of, you know, how can I develop in this culture, in this environment? How can I have a better relationship with my teammates and my coach here?
Yeah, you have to be coachable at that age. You have to be adaptable. And if you're not, like, you will fall by the wayside. Because, you know, to come in arrogant, and, you know, to use the word you use, Nico, and I agree with that, is to come in at that age arrogant, is the biggest mistake you could ever make.
You know, it's interesting what Andreas just put up right here. I never even thought about this before, Andreas, so thank you for pointing this out right here. You know, he said is that if a 5'11 keeper can do what a 6'2 keeper can, the 5'11 keeper, you know, is more athletic. It takes more athleticism for a 5'11 keeper to be able to replicate what a 6'2 goalkeeper can do. So if you're talking about, you know,
pulling ceiling, down crosses or something like that, like, yeah.
So, but
I think when it comes to shot stopping, like, that comes down to movement, explosion, and positioning. I think if you're talking about going up for crosses in a crowd and stuff like that, you know, the 5'11 goalkeeper definitely has to have their athleticism, their timing, their positioning on point to go up in a crowd against a bunch of 6'1" or 6'2" field players, depending on what league you're playing in, and bring the ball down. So yes, there is some truth to that. Yeah.
No, I also agree, but it's also interesting that he said that, and it's also interesting that Michael said I wouldn't have thought of that. It's because some things are measurable and some things are not measurable. Yeah. So like from like the physical test of like, you know, sprinting, a T-test, anything like that, we can measure the time. We can have some concrete evidence and show a progression or a digression over time. With, you know, height to athleticism, or even, you know, anyone's opinion of a player, if it's at a showcase or if it's in a training session, that's to that own person's, you know, perspective and, you know, judgment at the time. That's something that's not concrete and cannot be measured, but it's only someone's opinion.
Well, you know, speaking of that, you know, Saskia, obviously, you know, this showcase is coming up that Nico's going to be a part of, you know, scouting and identifying to bring goalkeepers over to Italy. Like, do you have any advice for young goalkeepers kind of going into that type of environment, you know, because, obviously, that can be very nerve-wracking, not just only for the young player, but also for the parents.
Well, parents, stay home. like we just said, you have to go in and be coachable and open-minded and be willing to make mistakes. And it's because you have to, as a young goalkeeper, realizing what Nico and them aren't looking for is the perfect goalkeeper out there at 15 or 14 years old. They're looking for who to develop. And so, like I said, be open-minded, be there, know you're going to make mistakes. And it's how you don't realize, and I don't think young players realize this, you're watching everything. So us as coaches are watching everything. We're watching your mental side of it, which Nico brought up plenty. How are you reacting to making the mistakes? How are you reacting to your players around you? How are you reacting to adversity? How are you responding when you do something really well? You know, that's all part of it too, to see if this is the type of person mentally strong enough to bring overseas, to bring to Italy, and can handle that. So it's not just about your shot stopping ability and everything like that. It's about the full package.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, one of the things, Nico, I have a question in regards to that, like, because, you know, when we're talking about going overseas, like, how important is an EU passport? You know, cause I always hear this is, it's so, you know, you need to have an EU passport in order to be able to get into an academy and all that. Like, is that something that's like a requirement before you even go to this showcase?
I have one for sale if anybody wants
it. It's not a requirement. The showcase is open at all, everyone. You know, the only thing that the showcase is limited by right now is, you know, it's a boys showcase. The age is between 13 and 18. And also, you know, space can be limited as well, depending on how many coaches we can possibly have for players. So other than that, it's open to anyone and all. Having a passport, it's probably helpful, going through the bureaucratic process. I can't speak on that just because, you know, that's not my line of work and I don't want to misspeak. But, you know, obviously having one would, you know, definitely help opportunity because teams only have a certain amount of international spots once you get to a certain age.
Just really quickly before we get into these college clips and, you know, some really, really awesome actions by your young goalkeeper over here. It's Abby, right? Abby Cowles?
Coles. Abby Coles.
Abby Coles. Is that, you know, like, are all the clubs looking at this showcase? Like, is it like Milan, Juventus, like all the clubs, or is it like specific clubs?
So right, it's open to all the clubs. So, you know, the event that they're going to have in Rome, that's up to the club's discretion if they're going to send one scout, two scout, no scouts. So, you know, the showcase gives the opportunity to present, you know, yourself as a player, but also gives the opportunity to, you know, get another opportunity eventually. So, you know, for me as a goalkeeper coach for them, I'm running them through a session. And then the collective staff of Rome City Institute, you know, they're making that decision of, you know, if someone is going to be invited to that, you know,
that next step.
Yeah, that next step. So, yeah.
All right. Let's get to these clips right here. So this is there's some really, really cool actions right here. So I think this is against Binghamton. And it's like 0-0 with like 3 minutes left in the half. There's a spin move at the top of the 18. Actually, let me just play it all right back here. It's like a spin move at the top by Samaya Reed right here. Shot on goal. And now, Coles?
Coles.
Coles. It's a spill. And as Suskia says, never follow one mistake with a second mistake. She gets right back up because it's a dangerous error. Lauren Clark tries to lift it right over her, but she gets that big paw up. And it's a brilliant save over the bar right there. That is just absolutely massive on the brilliant recovery. So let's break this down from the very top right here. So Nico, first off, what is she seeing right here?
So right now she's looking at the ball, where the ball is, trying to make sure she's in the right position between the ball and the middle of the goal. And then one thing I've been focusing on is the leg load. So once, you know, you see the leg load, then we get into that, you know, stance for reaction, and then it's quick reaction saves after that. So here, obviously, you know, a little spill, but now what can we do to fix it? Find a solution.
And I love it. Just that quick hand shot up right there. I mean, I love it. You know, Suskia's looking at that because this is exactly what she wants for somebody to do. Not dwell on the fact that, oh, I just spilled the ball. Next thing you know, it's in the back of the net, right?
Right. Well, you can tell, like, her focus, so her head, her eyes, and everything are still on where the rebound went. And so just, get, you know, it doesn't have to be pretty. Like, she's even still on her knees here, but she just says, I got to make myself big and get what I can to this ball. And even still, to have the body shape on your knee, I know this is crazy, the body shape on your knees to get power enough with that one hand to pop it over the bar is great. You know, it's just, what can I do? What can I get to this?
I was just literally going to say that, because I've seen a lot of goalkeepers, including myself, who've tried to make this save, and we don't get enough push off on it, enough power on it. And so we end up tipping it into the net. But she's able to really get that full power behind it. Nico, is that something you work on recovery movements?
So recovery movements, to an extent, yes. A big thing that, you know, I like to do in particular, everything has to be ball oriented. So not focusing on the person, the player, the, you know, you have rec to the person or rec to the ball. So it's all ball oriented, mm-hmm. you know, actions that I like to train. So not really focusing too much on the person, but, you know, the deflection, because that ball can deflect off anybody. You know, the shot can look like it's going to the keeper's left, hit somebody, goes to the right. It has to be ball oriented for me.
Yeah. You know, speaking of ball oriented, I want to move on to this next clip right here as how disappointed that player is. You can see from her on the floor right there. She's like, I should have. She's like, how did I not score that right there? Let's see here. So right here. So this is against Navy, I believe. And the game is tied up, and it's a dribble direct by Alexa Riddle towards the near post. And I've seen so many young goalkeepers, Nico, in this situation, and older goalkeepers, including myself, come off this post right here, exposing that space, and then they just get slotted on. But obviously he's right there, nice and tight with the post, waits for the player to make a commitment, stays with it, disciplined, and it's just a great save on the near post right there. So why don't you kind of take us back here from the dribble first?
Yeah, right. So I believe right. That was on the kickoff. Just overloaded the one side, found the space and behind. And again, you know, now finding that space, you see her chuck her shoulder, looking for that post, probably heels to the post was her thought. And now just focusing on the 1v1 with the player. And again, ball-oriented movement, reacting to the ball. Because here, it's the defenders are, you know, behind the attacking player. So it's, you know, it's on her. And I can only speak for, you know, how I train and, you know, my thoughts on it. I can't speak for her. So a huge thing for me is like, you know, I can never play for the player. I can only train them for the situations, what they might see, and prepare them for the, you know, to make the correct decision. And that's huge, is, you know, making the correct decision consistently. And that's what creates a higher level player.
Saskia, any thoughts right here?
Well, I think we've talked about this so many times, Mike, is like sometimes you don't, like, we'll see so many young goalkeepers come here, right? And remember that you're being baited, okay? There's no long touch. The ball's right on her foot. She's trying to get you to just come like a dart at her so she can slot it while you're moving underneath. So having the IQ to say, okay, I'm going to make you beat me. I'm going to, you know, because now you're not coming. So you didn't bite, and you're giving time for your defender to recover. So like we've talked about this so many times, the forward knows there's pressure coming. So now she has to make a decision. You didn't make it for her. And she's also taken herself into an angle, and you close that angle properly, it's going to allow you to make this save. Had she come out, which we see so many young goalkeepers do, say, oh my God, here comes 1v1. I got to go flying at her. You've just gotten baited, and that's in the back of the net.
Yeah, right here. Boom.
There's no long touch.
Yeah.
And to have the IQ, the goalkeeper IQ, to say, well, okay, she's not long touching it. She's keeping on her foot. She's keeping on her foot. So if I move forward right now, she's going to catch me on my movement. And so she waits. And I think she just does little micro movements to close the spaces, to close the angles, and she's got her.
I absolutely love that. It's just that lateral movement across, basically forcing her into a bad angle where she doesn't have a shot on goal. And it's just, I mean, she's got nothing here. She's got nothing.
I mean, if I was a coach for the other team, I would have told her to take a touch more central, like, you know, to cut in front of that defender that was recovering and either get taken down or have more of the goal to shoot at. So
Nico, anything else you want to add to that before we move on to this next clip?
No, we can move on to LIU, I believe.
Yes. Oh, you knew right away.
Yeah.
Yep. So this is against LIU. I think you guys were up 1-0, right?
That was the final. Right here.
This is the final play?
No, that was the final score, 1-0.
Oh, the final score, 1-0. So, losing my voice here. In swinging cross to the top of the 18. It's a simple one-touch ball inside the box to Van Bosbeek, I think it is. She dribbles for separation. Shot with an obstructed view to the back post. Coles covers it. Nice. Great awareness. Boom. And save right over there. Obviously a difficult situation for a goalkeeper. Not a lot you can see right here.
No, not a lot you can see. And this is where that kind of team studio comes into play of, like, you know, our scouting reports here and kind of understanding the player. So, like, for me in particular, I want to have a great understanding of the other team. So, you know, I'm definitely going to do my homework, and I take that into consideration in how I make, you know, my training sessions days in preparation for the match, and try to expose some of, you know, the similar and trendy movements and actions of the attacking players. That way it's recognizable. It's a trained behavior that, you know, somewhat seen before the match, and, you know, we're ready for anything that can happen and come up.
I mean, this is a difficult save to make, Susk, is it not?
Yeah, but I love the load on the leg, and it's an attacking load, so she's got it at a good angle, and she goes two hands to the ball to get the most power out of her entire body that she can.
Yeah. You know, and I think this is one of those situations from a mental standpoint, too. A lot of young goalkeepers, they just give up. They go, I can't see the ball, and they panic, and the next thing you know, it's in the back of the net. They don't even get any sort of push-off. But instead, she gives her best effort that she could give, and what happens, happens. And because of that, she's successful with it.
Yeah, no, she did a fantastic job, and, you know, definitely huge save for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, boom. God, I mean, she's literally, that's literally being tucked
full,
to the back
full
post.
Stretch.
Full stretch.
Full stretch. That is massive. How much obstructed view work do you do, Nico, at your trainings?
You know, I do quite a bit. It really depends on the day, you know, what our training load looks like. And then I always try to, you know, for me, I try to complement what we're doing on the field. So try to complement what we're doing with the field players after the goalkeeper session. Also trying to, you know, create a preparation for who we're going to be playing that week. Whether it's, like, you know, match day plus one, minus two, or just match day minus two. It's just kind of, you know, making sure we're fresh, making sure we're on our toes, and we're always prepared. So it really depends on the week and, you know, kind of what I'm thinking. Also, like, you know, my conversations I have with my keepers and kind of seeing how they are, you know, and what maybe the want is, maybe, you know, they want to have, like, more 1v1 or angle play. Okay, we can, you know, try to figure something out. But, you know, I try to be creative every day. One of the best pieces of coaching advice I ever got was actually from my professor at Rome City. He says, if you want to be a great coach, you have to play basketball. So what that means, you take a piece of paper, you draw up your session every day, you put it, you know, into your computer, whatever system you have. And then when you're done with it, you crumble it up at the end of the day and play basketball with a recycling bin, trash can, whatever you have. So, to answer your question, you know, I don't have, you know, set days of the week. I do specific things. I try to be creative every day and, you know, feel the moment, see, you know, what, you know, we need to work on, what we want to prepare for, and also try to complement what we're doing as a team within staying in, like, you know, our training load.
Yeah. You know, as we start wrapping this up, you know, Susk, and Nico, thanks for taking the time, you know, on a match day. I know that's always a difficult, hectic time with people handing you cords and scouting reports and all sorts of crazy stuff before the game. Is we've talked about this a lot, Susk, in regards to, for a lot of young goalkeeper coaches out there, how important it is that you replicate what the goalkeeper is going to be seeing in the games and the demands that they're going to be seeing. And so many young goalkeeper coaches out there, I still see doing sessions where with full on view, and you know this, to playing at the highest of levels, you rarely get a full view on the ball.
No, we talk about that all the time. You have to, it has to be game realistic, you know, depending on what you're working on. You know, we just spent the beginning of this podcast talking about, depending on the age, focusing on technical ability and everything like that, then working it up to tactical and understanding, you know, adding defenders and everything. But when you're at a certain point, college, you know, going into the pros, certain age, then yes, you're a lot of the things you do, they have to be game realistic. Not, you know, you can build to it, but there, it has to be incorporated into your training.
Yeah. But if it's dead ball, neutral space, open, wide open view the entire session, unless it's a fully technical session on just, right. You know, it's going to be, it's not going to be preparing you for the match actions. So, so Nico, as we start wrapping up, again, you know, thanks for this. Tell us when is this showcase? And if you want to plug it before.
Yeah. So there are a few showcases, coming up. There'll be one, November 12th and 13th down in Miami. The following weekend, November 18th and 19th, we'll have one here in Baltimore at UMBC. And then there'll be one in January in California. Location to be determined, but it'll be out in California in January. So with that, there are different ones that go throughout the year. There's always a Kansas City one, a New York one. I believe there's going to be one in Argentina at some point in November as well. So that definitely expanding. And also they go up to Canada, so Montreal and Toronto as well. And soon to come, Boston.
Argentina, that developing soccer nation, you know, that just very, very much just never seen any Argentinian goalkeepers by any stretch of the imagination.
No, coming I can't name it.
Totally joking there. Well, awesome, man. Obviously, guys, if you want to reach out to us, it's contact at insidethe18media.com or at Goalkeeper Podcast on the Union. If you don't know what the Union is, it is a platform for youth players and their parents to engage with top pros all over the world. We're doing breakdown sessions. We're doing town halls for parents. All sorts of college recruiting stuff's going to be coming up. I know Nico's going to be getting involved very soon once the college season wraps up. He's been a little bit busy with that. But I believe your handle, if anybody wants to reach out to you, is at Roro the Greek over there, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And obviously, guys, you can reach out to Saskia at Saskia, as you can see it right over there. It doesn't get any easier than that, guys. Now,
well, it's not like at Kim.
No, but you know what's going to happen is some young goalkeeper in Holland is going to join, and she's going to have to be like at Saskia one or something like that. And so she'll start getting all these DMs for you. Oh my gosh, guys. Well, we appreciate all the time, guys. That's all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys.